Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for coming, and it's good to be with you. I encourage you to get your Bible and come with me back to the book of Proverbs. The Bible is a library. It's a collection of books. 66, 39 in the old, the first five, Genesis through Deuteronomy, are books of law, followed by 12 books of history, Joshua through Esther, and then five books of poetry, Job through Song of Solomon, and then 17 books of prophecy. We're visiting the poetry department of the Bible Library. This period of history is known as the period of the United Kingdom. There are different periods of history in the Bible, right? The period before the flood, the period after the flood. What comes next? The period of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The patriarchal period, right? Sometimes called the period of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then what? Period of wandering. Period of conquest as the people take possession of the promised land. Period of the judges. Period of the United Kingdom. So we're in the period of the United Kingdom. Began with the reign of Saul and then followed by David and his son Solomon before the kingdom divided. And we encourage you to think with us about wisdom to be learned from this period of history. The first verse of the book of Proverbs attributes its authorship to Solomon, the Proverbs of Solomon. God gave Solomon wisdom that exceeded the wisdom of all men. And he was famous for his proverbs. In 1 Kings chapter 4 and in verse 32, he spake 3,000 proverbs. That's a lot of proverbs, isn't it? The book of Proverbs contains so much material that will help a person through life that we'd do well to ponder the proverbs periodically. How many chapters in this book? Anybody know off the top of their head? 31. What are you open to a recommendation? What we might want to consider doing is take each month that has 31 days, and in addition to our daily Bible reading that we're already doing, read one chapter of the book of Proverbs during that month. And if we'll do that, we'll do that seven times each year. And think of the value that means to us. And those of us who have little young people at home, to do that with our children. And as we read a chapter, to make some good application along the way. You might consider that if you can find time in your schedule. It'll be worthwhile. It won't take very long to read a chapter and then to think about it. What I want to do is just kind of explore with us today the first chapter of the book of Proverbs to hopefully whet our appetite for further reading and deeper study. Proverbs 1, we'll begin reading in verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice and judgment and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck. What do you know about Solomon besides the two things that are mentioned of him in verse 1? He's the son of David, king of Israel. The son of David with Bathsheba, as you read about in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and in verse 24. And he succeeded his father David as king of Israel. What do you know about him in addition to that? Justin?
About Solomon, he asked God for wisdom.
He did, didn't he? He's given a blank check, in essence, by God. Ask what I shall give thee. If that had been you or me, what would we have asked for? He said in 1 Kings 3 and verse 9, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart, to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the Bible says, the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. To get some background information on Solomon, the author of the book of Proverbs, you might like to read the first 11 chapters of 1 Kings. 1 Kings 1 through 11. David charged his son Solomon in 1 Kings 2. And would to God that we would see the value of giving these kind of instructions to our children, to realize that we won't always be here. I go the way of all the earth. That's an expression of death. Be strong, show thyself a man, keep the charge of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, keep his statutes and his commandments, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest, and whithersoever thou turnest thyself. Good advice from a father to his son. And then in 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 22, we read of Solomon's provision for one day, 30 measures of fine flour, 80 measures of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen out of the pastures, and 100 sheep, beside harts and roebucks, and fallow deer and fatted fowl. He had dominion over all the region on this side of the river, from Tipsah to Aza, over all the kings on this side the river. He had peace on all sides round about him. Verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding, exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and all the wisdom of Egypt. In chapters 5 through 8, you read of the building of the temple and the completion of that great task, the house of God. It came into David, his father's heart, to build a house for God, but God wouldn't allow that. He had been a man of war. He had shed much blood. God had other plans. God had plans for building him a house, and for his son Solomon to build the temple, which he did. And one of the great prayers of the Bible is Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple, as recorded in chapter 8. Unfortunately, in chapter 11, he loved many strange women, and his wives turned away his heart. His heart was not perfect. He went after other gods. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, went not fully after the Lord as David his father. But if you want to get some background information on this author of this good book, read those first 11 chapters of 1 Kings. What other books did Solomon write besides Proverbs?
Song of Solomon.
The Song of Songs and Ecclesiastes, which also make for good studies. What is a proverb? A proverb is a wise saying. And these are generalities. Things that are generally true. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Sometimes, unfortunately, you can do everything right as a parent, but children have a mind of their own, don't they? And so, generally, train up a child in the way he should go, when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing, and obtaineth the fear of the Lord. That's generally true, but was Jezebel a good thing for Ahab? And so, generally, we're talking about things that are generally true, practical, wise sayings, time-honored sayings. And verses 2 through 4 give us the stated purpose of the book. What's he trying to accomplish? What's he after in his writing? To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. You might underscore, highlight the young man. Put emphasis on the young man. This book contains a lot of valuable information for young people. It's not a book to wait to read and to study and to think about as we age, though it's valuable for people of all ages. But start out when you're young, seeing the value of reading and studying and learning all you can from the book of Proverbs. The Proverbs properly applied will make us honest and upright. And there's some words that would be well to consider and to think about that appear here in this stated purpose of the author's writing, verses 2 through 4. In verse 3, he mentions wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, and then in verse 4, knowledge and discretion. Those words are used throughout this book, and they are used interchangeably in lots of ways. Notice what a wise man will do, according to verse 5. A wise man will what? Will hear. A wise man will hear. Jesus often said, as he taught, "He that hath ears to hear, let him what? Let him hear." And so that's the first step, is to be willing to hear what Solomon has to say. Unfortunately, there are those like Stephen encountered in Acts 7 who had stopped their ears, didn't want to hear. And as Paul warned Timothy in 2 Timothy 4, there are those who will turn their ears away from the truth. They don't want to hear. And a wise man will hear. Are we wise from that standpoint? But not only will he hear, he'll what? He'll increase learning. The wise are always seeking to advance their knowledge. We never get to a point where we know what or how much.
It all.
It all. No, we don't. And the more we learn, the more we
realize
that we don't know, and that there is to learn. In Proverbs chapter 9, verse 9, "Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning." So we've got to continue to have our ears open and be willing to learn and to increase in our knowledge. Verse 7 contains the first actual proverb or saying in the book. And you might like to write it out. You might like to memorize it. A good way to memorize a thing sometimes is to just write it out over and over again, or to get you like a little index card and on one side put the passage, Proverbs 1:7. And then on the other side, just write the text out and look at it from time to time, Proverbs 1:7. And just take the first few words, the fear of the Lord, the fear of the Lord, and let that sink down into your heart, the fear of the Lord. And then go a little bit further, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And to say that over again, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then to think about that. Then sometime out, maybe you do that in the morning, you get up in the morning, and then maybe at lunch, you try to remember. That's Proverbs 1:7. Say, the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. I can't remember the rest of that. I pull that out. Oh, yes, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So I think about that again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And I do that from time to time throughout the day and over the course of a week or two, however long it takes for me to get that in my mind. I don't have to look at it anymore. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's one way you could do it. You could post that somewhere you visit often, maybe the refrigerator or maybe the mirror somewhere, that you're going to see it from time to time. And you read it and you don't really think about it. But from reading it throughout the day, several times a day, several times throughout the week and over the course of a month, before you know it, where is it? You put it in your long-term memory. It's a good way to memorize passages. And certainly this is one that is worth doing. And if we do that with different Bible verses from time to time, just think over the course of a year, how many of those that we could have committed to memory. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. It'd make a good study to just talk about the fear of the Lord. That word fear in its various forms occurs a good number of times throughout the Bible. And often it's used in connection with fear of the Lord. And I need to know about that. I believe the first example of fear is when, of course, Hebrews 11:7 is the passage that uses the word. It doesn't appear in Genesis 6, but the first occasion is with reference to Noah. Genesis 6, when Hebrews 11:7 reports on that, that by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with what?
Fear.
Moved with fear and prepared an ark. That goes back to Genesis 6, when God commissioned the patriarch Noah, make thee an ark of gopher wood. He warned him of an impending flood. And it was fear that moved him to make the ark like God told him to. That's the fear of the Lord. And what is the fear of the Lord? What does it mean to have fear of God?
Reverence.
Reverence, respect, honor. The fear of God is reverential obedience. It's the respect and reverence that moves and motivates us to do what God says. It's not necessarily being afraid of God, but being afraid of disobedience to God, of displeasing God because of the consequences and the curses that come, that we bring upon ourselves when we fail to do what God says. But no man can ever truly be wise without the fear of the Lord. That's where it all begins. And we might consider some parallel passages like Proverbs 9 and verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You might make a note of that out beside Proverbs 1 and in verse 7, Proverbs 9 and verse 10. Also in Psalm 111 and in verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And then back in the book of Job in chapter 28 and in verse 28, where Job uttered these words, "Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and depart from evil is understanding. The foolish do not fear the Lord, and therefore despise wisdom and instruction." And so you have a contrast. There are those who fear the Lord, and then there are those who despise. And to despise is to not have the kind of respect or regard that we should have. It's a total lack of respect for the Lord and for His Word. Those who do not fear come to despise. And the other passages that show that to be the case, like in the second epistle of Peter in chapter 2 and in verse 10, when he said, "Chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government." There are special instructions in the Scriptures that grow out of this fact, that those who do not fear the Lord despise wisdom and instruction. Like Proverbs 23 and in verse 9, "Speak not in the ears of a fool." Why not? "For he will despise the wisdom of thy words." Fools despise wisdom. You're wasting your time, aren't you? If you speak into the ears of a fool, why are you wasting your time? Because he despises wisdom. He doesn't have any respect for you or what you're going to say. You're wasting your time with such a person as that. And in the Sermon on the Mount, as Jesus uttered these words in Matthew chapter 7 and in verse 6, he said, "Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you." They don't have any regard for the value of what you're offering them, and so you're wasting your time. And perhaps you come to a realization when you're talking with people, when you're trying to teach some people, that you come to a realization that maybe I'm casting my pearl before swine. And I'm speaking to the fool, if you will, and he doesn't have any regard, any respect for what I'm saying. He despises wisdom. And so there are a lot of instructions in the Scriptures that grow out of this principle that Solomon stated so long ago in Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 7. Notice now in verse 8 the words "my son." You might highlight those. "My son" appears 23 times in my Bible in the book of Proverbs. And then sometimes the word "ye children." He'll use this singular, "my son," and then he'll use the plural, "ye children." And those are used four times. So repeatedly throughout the book, total 27 times, "my son, ye children." And you might watch for those. You might like to highlight those. When Solomon uses the expression, like he does here in verse 8, "my son," he does that to begin a section of material. And he usually tells what listening to his instruction will mean to his life. Notice how that happens here in verses 8 and 9. He says, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother." So he gives the instruction to hear and not forsake. But what's that going to mean to your life? What's that going to do for you? What's the benefit? Verse 9, "For they shall be an ornament of grace under thy head and chains about thy neck." Think of other examples like that. Verse 1 and 2, chapter 3, "My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments." There's the instruction, verse 1. What's that going to mean to your life if you do that? Verse 2, "For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee." Then look at another example, chapter 4 and verse 10. "Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings." Why? What's that going to mean to your life if you do that? If you hear and you receive, he said, "the years of thy life shall be many." And so you see how he uses these expressions, "my son, ye children," to begin a section of material. And when he does that, he tells what listening to his instruction will mean to your life. But notice again in chapter 1 verse 8 that the verse shows that both parents have important parts in a child's rearing, don't they? Who's he mentioned there in verse 8? Father and mother. You might take your highlighter, take your pen, pencil, whatever, and highlight that, circle that, underscore that. He talks about the instruction of thy father and the law of thy mother. Never underestimate the importance of father and mother. And God help us to be the kind of fathers that our children need us to be, that God would have us to be, and mothers to be the kind of mothers that children need and God expects for the benefit and the value of our young people. And he said in verse 9, "They shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck." The ornament was a wreath or garland that the victor wore on his head. And this was really an expression of advancement, of promotion, of honor, of exaltation. When Joseph, for example, back in the book of Genesis in chapter 41, was promoted to ruler in Egypt. Remember what was put about his neck? A gold chain. Genesis 41:41, when Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "See, I set thee over all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, put a gold chain about his neck, made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, "Bow the knee." And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And so these principles, when you forsake not the law of your mother, when you hear the instruction of your father, that is wise, that's rooted within the wisdom of Scripture, it's going to advance you, it's going to promote you, it's going to elevate you, it's going to bring you to a place and position of honor. That's also seen in the book of Daniel, when you have the handwriting of the wall in Daniel chapter 5. And in verse 7, King Belshazzar said, "Whosoever shall read this writing, show me the interpretation thereof, shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck. He shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." That's what would be done for the one who could read and interpret the handwriting on the wall. And so here in the book of Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 9, when he talks about "they," that is the instruction of thy father, the law of thy mother, "they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck." What's that saying? That's saying it's going to bring you honor. It's going to bring you promotion. You're going to be advanced. You're going to be a person of dignity. And we rob ourselves of that when we despise the wisdom of our parents that comes from the Word of the Lord. Now, following the sound teachings of father and mother will bring the child to great dignity as well as give beauty to his life. And sometimes, unfortunately, there are those who fail to appreciate that. But the elements of good character are often likened to spiritual ornaments. You think of ornaments. You think maybe of ornaments that a person might wear, maybe have earrings in their ear, a necklace about them, and those are ornaments. The Bible talks about ornaments of that kind and that nature. But the ornaments that are within, that describe and define our character, are the ones that are of true worth. And I want you to think about that from this standpoint. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, when Peter talked about husbands and wives, and he talked about the wife in particular, saying, "Who's adorning? Let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament," there's our word, "even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price." And so there are those who, they look in the mirror, and we don't need to just let ourselves go from that standpoint. But they put a lot of emphasis on the outward man, and they're putting on all these ornaments to make sure everything looks just right. But is it possible that we put so much emphasis on the outer that we neglect the inner? He talked about that which is in the sight of God of great price, not being the hair or the necessarily what we're wearing, but the hidden man of the heart. He's talking about that meek and quiet spirit that you see in the example of Sarah, for example, a holy woman of old time who was in subjection to her husband, obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And that's an ornament. And so think about when you're putting on your ornaments, that which is in the sight of God of great price. Then again, in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, when Paul gave instruction to the preacher Timothy, he said, "In like manner also the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair, gold, or pearls, or costly array." Some people put the emphasis on that, the costly array. "Boy, I spend a lot of money on this wardrobe," somebody says, and boy, doesn't that look nice? Isn't that pretty? Or look at the hair and all that's been done with the hair as it being broidered, or the gold or the pearls. And some people put a lot of emphasis on those things. But notice he's talking about modest apparel and shamefacedness and sobriety and women professing themselves with godliness, professing godliness with good works. And so the elements of good character are likened to spiritual ornaments. Notice also Proverbs chapter 3, verses 21 and 22. My son, let not them depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. Have we graced our neck, so to speak, with these elements of good character? Yes, I've graced my neck. I have this beautiful gold necklace on. No, that's not what we're talking about. Have we graced our necks with the elements of good character, having listened to the instruction of our father and not despising the law of our mother? But also, Proverbs 1, 10 through 19. Next section. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk not down the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil. Make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lies. So are the ways of every one that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. You know, the world will put pressure on every person to try to join them. And they can paint a rosy picture in the young person's mind. But to be different from the world is to be odd, to be out of step, and all that a young person really does not want to be. And so the invitation, come thou with us, becomes enticement. And their urging, their insistence, come with us, becomes temptation. And the only way that any of us, particularly the young person, but any of us can resist those temptations that come from the outside. The only way that we can keep from bending to those pressures that come to us from the people on the outside is by that which we have on the inside. Don't forget that. Now, there are three big words in verse 10. The last three words. You got to highlight those. Consent thou not. Consent thou not. What's another way of saying that? Just say no. Who was it launched a drug campaign, anti-drug campaign, with those three words? Just say no. Nancy Reagan. I remember that when I was in school. Perhaps some of you do as well. Just say no. And those would be good words for us today. Just say no to what? Just say no to drugs. Just say no to alcohol. Just say no to sexual immorality. Just say no to sin. Just say no. Consent thou not. That's what Joseph did when urged by Potiphar's wife in Genesis 39, 8 and 9. He consented not. He said no. He refused. He fled and got him out. That's what Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did when they were at Nebuchadnezzar's table. They were Jews, realized that there were certain foods that were off limits that would have caused them to be unclean. They said no. They refused to defile themselves with the portion of the king's meat. And then when Daniel's three friends found themselves before the king's image and the decree to bow and worship, they said what? No, we will not. We will not. They would rather face the fire than bend. They would not bow. And I believe reference is made to them in the faith chapter in Hebrews chapter 11 that they, through faith, quenched the violence of fire. There's faith that quenches fire. Fire-quenching faith. Make good study, wouldn't it? Fire-quenching faith. How'd they quench the violence of fire? The fire didn't hurt them. You can just walk into a building, a burned-out building, and when you walk out, you're going to have the smell of smoke on you. They didn't even have the smell of smoke on them when they came out of the furnace. And that was quenched through their faith. They had the faith that they would not consent. They would say no. And it's a good chapter, Daniel 3. Read that as a young person. When your friends are trying to get you to bend and to bow, to go there and to do this and to do that, just say no. We will not. Does it make any difference what anybody else does, what anybody else says? But what would God have me to do? The world's going to put pressure on us, but we've got to abstain from this world's evil. The Bible says, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and then verse 22. And it takes conviction, it takes honesty, it takes courage for us to say no. Solomon warns about evil men and evil women. You might consider Proverbs 2, 12 through 17, where in verse 12 he talked about delivering thee from the way of the evil man. Then verse 16, deliver thee from the strange woman. Evil men are wicked oppressors out to get ill-gotten gain. And the evil women that he addresses are immoral adulteresses. Now verses 11 through 14, come with us, let us cast in thy lot among us, really puts the enticement of verse 10 into words. They said, come with us, let us do this, let us do that. Notice in verse 10, it said, as sinners entice thee. So what you have is the enticement in words. They're going to entice you through words, what they say. And notice that the appeal is, we shall. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. And there's some words in these texts that show the people that are going to be hurt don't suspect it, and they don't deserve it. They don't suspect anything because verse 11 says they lay wait, they lurk privily. And they certainly don't deserve it because they're innocent. They're innocent. And all that comes from verse 11. Notice some things that are the same now in verse 12. Swallow, let us swallow them up alive as the grave whole, as those that go down the pit. Swallow and go down, go together. Whole and the grave, go together. The pit, or alive and whole, go together. And then the grave and the pit go together. And death is spoken of as going down into the pit. There are different expressions of death. We saw that when David gave charge to Solomon. He said, I go the way of all the earth. Paul said, the time of my departure is at hand. So death is a going the way of all the earth. Death is a departure. Death is a giving up the ghost. And death is going down into the pit. Psalm 28:1, I become like them that go down into the pit. And this is pictured as one of four things that are never satisfied. Like in Proverbs chapter 30, 15 and 16, the horse leech hath two daughters crying, give, give. There are three things that are never satisfied, yea, four things say not, it is enough. The grave. Has the grave ever said, it's enough? No more dead, we're too full, we don't have any more room. No, unfortunately that's not the case. The barren woman, the earth is not filled with water, the fire that saith not, it is enough. And verse 13 of Proverbs 1 shows what is luring them. What is it that's luring them? It's the hope of gain. Isn't this going to be wonderful? Isn't this going to be great? We're going to find and we're going to feel, right? We're going to find precious substance. We're going to find spoil. And then notice in verse 15, now that's really parallel to verse 10. He said, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Verse 10. But now in verse 15 he says, my son, walk not thou in the way with them, refrain thy foot from their path. To consent not is to walk not in the way with them. To consent not is to refrain thy foot from their path. You might consider Proverbs 4:14, enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Many times, unfortunately, people are quick to get into sin, but they want to take their time getting out of it. Notice he said in verse 16, their feet do what? Run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Run and make haste. What are they doing? They're going the wrong direction. But they're quick to get into sin. They're running to it. But then you try to get people to get out of it. One of these days I will. Right? Someday I will. And so it's opposite of what it ought to be. But notice also in your reading and study of Proverbs, particularly chapter 1, if only we could see the end from the beginning. And that's what Solomon is doing in this book. He's trying to get the young person to see the end from the beginning. And if we can see where that road leads, their enticement is not going to be so strong. Instead of looking, thinking, oh yes, we're going to get spoil. And we're going to find precious substance. Well, where does this lead? What's going to happen? View the final outcome from the outset. And then the enticement to join them won't be so strong. Notice how justice catches up with them. Their intention is to hurt others. But they pay with their own lives. Verse 18, they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. And he does that also, trying to help see the end from the beginning with the immoral woman, the strange woman. Proverbs 5:3, the lips of a strange woman drop as in honeycomb. Her mouth is smoother than oil. And so he's talking about honeycomb, the sweetness and the smoothness of the strange woman. But notice he said in verse 4, her end. Her end is what? Bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. One reason some people are taken by the strange woman is because they see the honeycomb. But they don't see the end. They don't think about the bitter end. They don't think about the wormwood, see? They don't think about the sharp two-edged sword. And so if we can see the end from the beginning, it's going to help keep us from going down that road, isn't it? That's the wisdom from Solomon in the book of Proverbs. And other passages also teach the sorrows and losses to be reaped by those greedy of gain. Like 1 Timothy 6:10, the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And so instead of getting, there's losing. And the important, his own life, is lost in trying to gain that which is unimportant, material things. And then finally, notice verses 20 through 33, where wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the street. She crieth in the chief place of concourse and the openings of the gates of the city. She uttereth her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I'll pour out my spirit unto you. I'll make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye said it not all my counsel, with none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I'll mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind. When distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge, and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel, they despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Here, wisdom is represented as a woman. Notice the word she and her. And note the things that wisdom is set forth as doing in this section. She's set forth as uttering her voice and crying. She cries and she speaks. She cries without, verse 20. She utters her voice in the streets. And observe where wisdom speaks. Without, in the streets, in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates, in the city. And so wisdom really speaks everywhere, in every place, if we'll just take time to listen. There's wisdom when we go outside and we're driving down the road. We can gain wisdom from the things that we see about us. Now, notice these terms here, simple ones, scorners, and fools. A simple one is a silly person, one who's easily persuaded and enticed. A scorner is one who mocks, who ridicules, and scoffs. A fool is somebody that is a simpleton, a dullard, one that is arrogant, and one translation renders that stupid fella. Verse 24 now transitions from an invitation and promise to that of judgment and denunciation. Because I have called and ye refused. I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. And unfortunately, it's often the case that God speaks, that God calls, but men do not listen. Men will not hear. Like Isaiah spoke of in Isaiah chapter 65 and in verse 12. Therefore will I number you to the sword, and ye shall all bow down to the slaughter. Because when I called, ye did not answer. When I spake, ye did not hear, but did evil before mine eyes, and did choose that wherein I delighted not. He said in this section of Proverbs that they said it not my counsel, verse 25. To said it not is to refuse and to reject. You remember the prophecy of the stone that was applied to Christ in Psalm 118, verse 22. The stone the builders refused. Psalm 118, 22 used the word refused. And then when Jesus quoted that and applied that to himself in Matthew 21, 42, he said the stone which the builders rejected. And then when Peter quoted that and applied it to Christ in Acts 4, 11, he said the stone that they set at naught. And so to set at naught is to refuse and to reject. And that's the case where the Bible is his own best commentary or interpreter. And notice, you might compare verses 25 and 30. Verse 25, ye said, not my counsel, would none of my reproof. Then verse 30, they would none of my counsel, they despised all my reproof. And notice the terms that describe the condition of those who reject wisdom. Calamity, verse 26. Fear, desolation, destruction, distress, and anguish, verses 26 and 27. And now wisdom is represented in verse 26 as laughing and mocking. Wisdom gets the last laugh. You know, there are those who will laugh at you. They'll mock you when you won't join with them, right? They're going to laugh at you because you're not going. They're going to ridicule you. And that's part of the pressure, to try to get you to go with the crowd and do what they're doing. And they're going to laugh at you because you're not going to do that. But you know, wisdom gets the last laugh. Because when the trouble comes, the anguish comes, the fear comes, and all the calamity comes, and then there are those that are laughing at them. There are those that laugh at them because, unfortunately, they chose not the fear of the Lord. And therefore, verse 28 rather shows that one can wait too late. Just as this text shows, they shall call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. And there are lots of other passages that go along with that concept, like in the book of Jeremiah. Just quickly, Jeremiah 11 and in verse 11. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them which they shall not be able to escape, and though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. Lots of text similar to that. But you can wait too late. And there are four reasons that these calamities come upon them. As stated in verses 29 and 30, they hated knowledge, they did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would none of my counsel, and they despised all my reproof. And he said, therefore, verse 31, shall they eat of the fruit of their own ways, and be filled with their own devices. In other words, they're going to reap as they have sown. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Galatians 6 and verse 7. And then verse 33 shows the two blessings of hearkening to wisdom. Whoso hearkeneth unto me, that's wisdom, shall do what? Dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Would you like to dwell safely? Would you like to have peace and quiet and not fear evil, not have fear of trouble? Then listen to wisdom. Hearken to wisdom. Consent thou not. Don't go when they say come. Just say no. That's a brief overview of Proverbs chapter 1. Hope that it's just kind of whetted our appetite to want to read more into this book and dig deeper and see the value of reading this from time to time. And as Paul said, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Let these words dwell in our hearts. And think of the value. If we do this every month that had 31 days and do that with our children and how that would benefit our lives. I've exhausted your time. I appreciate you listening and look forward to the remainder of this day together.